You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Portland Trailblazers came to Indianapolis on Monday night to take on the Pacers in what was a mainly hard-fought game where both teams jumped out to double-digit leads at one point. It was a back-and-forth battle that ultimately led with the Pacers being on top thanks to a Miles Turner game-clinching three, which is 9 seconds left. To lead the way for the Portland Trailblazers, CJ McCollum had 28 points and 8 assists. He was followed by a double-double from Hassan Whiteside, who had 18 points and 16 rebounds. And Gary Trent had 20 points, starting in place of the injured Damian Lillard. For the Pacers, the leading scorer, Domantas Bones, with 20 points and 11 rebounds. Miles Turner, I mentioned earlier, had a 14-10 to be the second Pacer to have a double-double. And Malcolm Brogdon had 17 points, and Victor Oladipo and TJ Warren had 15 apiece. As the Pacers beat the Portland Trailblazers 106-100 to move to four of their last five wins, something that seems almost impossible as this team has really what it felt like being a slump, but is really not in one much more anymore. Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the co-host of this wonderful show. I'm going to bring you two different segments of today's podcast. The first one, the good and the bad and the ugly, the Pacers win against the Portland Trailblazers. And then I'll bring in a special guest, the number one Miles Turner fan in my life, for the end of the segment. We'll talk about Miles Turner, his role with the Pacers team, what he did right tonight, and how the Pacers can move forward from his awesome performance tonight to turning him into a player that he really could and should be. So one quick break, and we'll get to the good, the bad, and the ugly from the game. As always, with the Pacers win, there's a lot more good than bad and than ugly. This was, I thought, a very good performance from a Pacers team playing against a team who I guess is not really that good without their best player, but it just felt like a better win. It was a TNT game. This is the first game they had without, I think, right, where they Vic returned and they were out Lamb, so it was kind of the first time they had their real, let's say, nine-man rotation set. It was just something that, it was the kind of game where it felt things would get comfortable, and you saw it at the start. And the first thing I want to go to that I liked, besides obviously that game-winning shot, was Victor Oladipo's 5-of-9 night for 15 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists. I thought he just played a really good game and did a good job not trying to overextend himself. I think late he took a big three when he probably didn't need to and kind of forced it. But overall, he played with, I guess what we can call within himself. He didn't try to, like, overdo it or whatnot and played just like, you know, didn't try, I guess the best way to say it, he didn't try to be like Victor Oladipo 2 years ago. He just tried to be Victor Oladipo, a guy who's a pretty good basketball player who can play some hard defense and score some buckets, but isn't going to be the guy that scores you 30 points a night right now because he is still kind of getting his flow back. And so I thought he played exceptional tonight, just playing in that role, 26 minutes. I realized what I saw out of him. But I think really the best probably of tonight, I know we usually do good, bad, ugly, but the best was obviously Miles Turner. He hit a huge three when it mattered most, you know, to seal that game in a game that very quickly felt like it might get out of reach, right? This Pacer team had what? It was what, 90? Was it 103-91? It was the score at one point, and then it was 103-100. If he doesn't make that shot, Portland has a chance to tie the game. And if they do that, the momentum is all in their favor, heading into overtime and whatnot. So Turner's three was huge. And you have to say, part of it has to do with Domantas Sabonis, who had an also really good night, who, in a broken play, I think is what Nathan Millen said after the game, was able to find Turner for the open bucket. Sabonis continues just to be a dominant, obviously, player, 20-11 with 4 assists. Overall, from tonight's game, I think this is the best performance from this, I guess, kind of new team, right? You saw everybody kind of fit together in a way that you haven't seen for a while. So you saw some rotation shifts at the end of the game with McConnell playing late. McConnell and Justin Holiday playing late into the game. As Vic only played 26 minutes, and you only got, I believe, 32 out of Miles Turner, and only 28 out of Sabonis, which was sort of different for this team. But frankly, I thought it was just the best overall performance from all these guys because it felt like this is the kind of team where, like, oh, if they play like this most nights, they have a shot at winning every game, right? I think you could certainly say, well, Lillard injured is a big issue, and that hurts this team. And this Trailblazers team is not very good without Damian Lillard. I mean, they've won some games recently, but they're obviously not the same team. But there is something about the way the team played that gives you confidence going forward that makes you feel like this team has a shot. And if you look at the NBA standings, right, I believe now they're only game and a half back of both Philadelphia and Miami. They're certainly within the striking distance of that four seed. I know maybe you could say better off to be the sixth seed to make the conference finals. Screw that. Win a playoff series and then worry about it, right? And they were in striking distance still to jump up to that four seed to get a first round, four home games if they go seven, stuff like that. Home court advantage are in the first round. Like they're within striking distance of that, and that is why this game felt different, in my opinion. I mean, you look up now, they've won four of their last five. You know, this team is moving in the right direction after what was really just, you want to call it, just a miserable loss to the Raptors on Sunday and a really miserable stretch before the All-Star break. They've, to me, turned a little bit of the corner. They got tough games going forward, certainly, but tonight was finally the time where I felt like, okay, this team is back to where they need to be. There's going to be some bumps in the road, and this team might lose a game like the Raptors, hopefully not by 46, but lose to a bad team here and there, but they're not going to lose six in a row anymore. They're going to be competitive every night, it feels like, and, you know, they might have an occasional game where they screw up, but overall, I feel like they're going to be back on track in a way that felt pretty good after tonight's game, at least. Some other, I guess we're going to, let's go to a little bit of bad, just to be on the Debbie Downer side. Doug McDermott had a pretty crap night, 0 for 4, 0 for 3 from 3. He only played 12 minutes, usually plays about 20, so did not have a very good night, just what his shot was not falling, was not really getting the looks that I think he usually gets, I guess, the way to put that. Like, he just, it felt like some more forced threes, I guess, instead of the kind of quick hit, kind of pass, like a quick hit three, so it didn't feel like he was playing in the game, I guess, maybe the right way to put that. Another bad, I think you look at it, Aaron Holiday, you know, 1 of 3 for 6 points, playing 14 minutes, you know, he's going to take some time to get back into the rotation, right? I think, you know, it felt like, what was it, late December, he had finally kind of hit his peak. I think it was around Christmas time, where he had finally, like, started to, like, look like a player. Oh, crap, Aaron Holiday made a leap, and then he kind of regressed back down, and they stopped playing him. I think give him 10 more games where he's back consistently playing minutes, and I think we'll see him return, hopefully, to that kind of mid-year form, because he is a critical piece in this Pacers team. I said before that if he can hit his potential at the right time, he can help them win a playoff series in a way no other player on the bench can. Not even McDermott, his brother, or McConnell, who let's face it, Justin Holiday and McConnell had a very good night, both of them. McMillan definitely trusted them late. They were the two highest plus-minus players for the Pacers, and they played them late into that fourth quarter, and they, you know, it took advantage of obviously what is a pretty bad and already depleted Blazers bench, especially without Lillard, which means Jerry Trey had to go in the starting lineup, which depletes them even more. And this is the team that's already down players. So overall, it was a pretty solid night for at least two of the four bench guys. And then the last guy I like to mention, I guess, is just go through Malcolm Brogdon. I know he took 20 shots. His shot still isn't falling at a rate you would like, but he did look a little better. You know, 17, 8, and 6 is a pretty solid stat line for him. I thought, you know, I don't know what it is. It just feels like he's forcing too many shots or being forced to take too many shots because he's the guy on the shot clocks and whatnot. Whatever it is, he's still not quite the player he was at start this year or the player he was even in that mid-year stretch or even last year in Milwaukee. He is definitely still in a little bit of a slump, but he's slowly getting out of it. And T.J. Warren also had a pretty nice night, 15 points, 5 rebounds. I mean, he played 30 minutes, most of any player. Well, him and Barnum both play 38. Warren just gets you buckets when you need him. I mean, I don't know how to put that. He is a walking bucket, and he's becoming a very decent defensive player who can make plays. And so it was good to see. The other bad I have tonight is the way they almost blew this game, right? They held, I think, I want to say they, at one point they held a 12-point lead in that fourth quarter. I'm pulling up real fast to make sure I'm right. But I believe they held They held a 103-93 lead after Brogdon hit a shot with 2 minutes left. And then they just almost blew it. And, you know, they got lucky. Turner had a great shot. Great pass by Sabonis at the same time. All that worked in their favor. But they came very close to blowing this game once again, which would have been really disappointing because, you know, when you win this game, you get it. Makes the week automatically a positive, no matter what happens the rest of the week. Which they've got a pretty tough schedule heading up. I believe they play Dallas, or they play Cleveland, and they play Dallas. So Cleveland's an easy game, but then they play Dallas. I think they end the week on Sunday, if I remember right, or might be bleeding into the next week. So they play San Antonio Monday, Milwaukee, Chicago, Dallas. So three of their next five games are against, I think, Spurs are in the playoffs or borderline playoff teams. So. Somewhat tough, and then after they got Boston, Philly, so they have a pretty tough schedule coming up. So it's good to get these kind of wins against teams who are okay, but maybe, you know, catch them on a good night or not, and it really kind of turns the table for this team because they are, like I said, in striking distance of that four seed. I'm trying to think what else from the game, from the good or bad or the ugly. I don't think I've got much more. Let's take one quick peek at the overall team stats. My first thing is I always jump to rebounds when I look at that. They won the offensive rebounding battle, which is something that's rare, and they tied on the defensive rebounding battle. So, just again, a pretty good night from the Pacers. I thought this is the first time I felt like this team is turn the page from that just terrible losing streak. You know, I think they beat a Milwaukee team without Giannis. They beat the Knicks, and then they beat Charlotte. Two of those three teams are terrible. So this is the first time I felt like, I know, even though the Blazers were out, Lillard, McCollum was a really good player, and they're still a pretty decent team without him, just from McCollum to Anthony to Whiteside and to Gary Trent. I mean, they're not, like, superb, but they're pretty good. So it's the first time I felt like this team had kind of turned the corner and is heading in a direction where I feel like they definitely could compete for that four seed and maybe even win a first-round playoff series. I was feeling kind of down for their huge losing streak, but I'm feeling they've called me back in. The Blazers have reeled me back in, and I'm getting excited about this team's going forward. All right, let's take one quick break and bring on a guest to talk about Miles Turner. Welcome back in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. So like I promised, I am bringing on the number one Miles Turner fan of my life, Marina Higuera. Marina is here right now. So we're going to chat a little bit about Miles Turner, how the Pacers are not using him right, and what they can do better with him so that he can succeed more. So Marina, you want to start this off with anything?
Yes, first of all, I do not give a fuck that Nate McMillan said, according to your lovely co-host, Tony East.
Fake news.
He tweeted a couple of minutes ago that it was a broken play, McMillan said of the last shot. Heavily praised the DeMontis Sabonis lead.
Well, so I think that's a good place to start, to be honest.
I wasn't finished, but anyways,
hold on. You can keep going after I say the statement.
No, it's okay.
So if their best play is a broken play, isn't that a bad sign?
I mean, if it were.
No, but I mean, like, if you have to rely on a non-scripted play to succeed, doesn't that mean...
But isn't Nate McMillan's best play the broken one? Isn't that kind of a sign of his coaching that maybe it's not
Isn't it a bad sign that if that he can't create a good enough play, that they have to break it, they have to screw it up to be able to make a good enough play?
That's the thing that I've constantly wondered about. Like, if you listen to a podcast from, like, 2 years ago when Adam first had me on, my question was, why do people treat basketball players like computers where every play has to come out with, like, a finalized outcome that's going to be definite, that's going to be...
Or the optimal outcome. You want to take the best, most efficient shot from the most efficient point of the court.
Exactly. Adam will keep explaining that to me. Every time we go out to dinner, he uses, like, sugar and salt.
I've done this once. Calm down. And you asked me to.
I do ask him that. But it doesn't make sense to me because they treat these players like they're expendable. Like every single outcome that they create is either going to be the optimal one, the definite one. Why can't you just have players out on the floor that are going to create efficient plays that you hope will work, that maybe might work, maybe won't, but you're going to use your talent to the best of their ability? Sometimes it's going to work, sometimes it's going to look broken, but it's still going to work. Like, why not just put Edmund Sumner out on the play and have him shoot for three and then it works? Like, maybe it's just going to happen on one day. Why does it have to be, like, some, oh, it's going to be a broken play because it's broken
because
up?
Because we live in a, I'm dying to just film it, we live in a world that everything is about math.
I hate math.
No, but everything is analytics analyzed to optimal perfection now because of our quantum algorithms.
But people aren't designed to be statistical. Like, there's always going to be factors that are going to affect you. Like, again, Tony reported that Miles said that it was just him drinking coffee.
That's the best
thing. Coffee isn't even good. That's going to be a hot take.
That's the best thing about basketball, right, is you can have all these stats and formulas for optimal outcome here or there. But ultimately it comes down to if you're in a tie game with 2 minutes left, who can score a bucket?
Sorry,
it could be a 20-footer, it could be a 2-footer, it could be a 35-footer from Steph Curry. It's all about can you get one bucket?
That probably wasn't the direction you wanted to go.
No, I'm good about that, honestly. That goes back to Turner because
he's so good, he's so talented, I love him so.
No.
I thought you were going to pause that and be like, stop.
No, I'm opening some stats real fast.
I love him.
So the thing about Turner is that for a while he was a non-optimal player, right? Because he took a lot of long twos and artificial shots, and he determined the threes, and then he eventually became a better three-point shooter, which he's taking nearly half his shots from three this year, which is a lot better. But his biggest issue to me is that the team doesn't know how to optimize his strengths.
Okay. We both said the same thing, but very different.
No, but if you think about it, offensively, he's good for about three things. Three-point shots.
Blocking.
Offensively.
Three-point shots, as usual.
Yeah. Three-point shots. And if you can get the right matchup, he can put the ball on the floor and go to the rim on a guy. Or you face him backwards to the basket, and he turns around and hits like a...
Eight to ten-footer. Role.
Yeah, the thing is he has an unbelievable size, but he is never trusted in a situation, or hasn't been trusted long enough where he can, like
trust him!
The thing you would say for a lot of us players is you have to fail a bunch before you can succeed. I mean, it's a way of life.
But why not just, like...
But he's never gotten the opportunity, right?
He's never gotten the opportunity to fail or succeed.
He's only played on teams that are good, so he's never given... he's never been on, like, a bad team where he's like, you can just score, take 25 shots. If you make 15 of them or not even make 8 of them, we don't care. Versus, like, he has to, you know... He has to be in a situation where he has to, you know, can only take 10 shots a game and has to make nearly 50% of them to be considered a good player, right? Like, Sabonis is in a situation where Sabonis was able to thrive in the situation where he didn't have a chance to fail, where he had to be a fish off as a player to stay on the court. But it's different
because he is
a more traditional kind of computable player, right? Like, Sabonis is very...
No.
But Sabonis is. Yes, he is. If you think about it, Sabonis runs a very same set amount of plays, and he can be kind of, you can adjust to those, but you can use him in a simpler situation over and over again. Pick and roll, pick and pop, off-ball screens. He can just do it, and then you can get him the ball rolling towards the rim, and you get him on a matchup. Turner doesn't quite have all those, like, technical things right, but what he does, he has some unbelievable raw talent in terms of just being able to score at a guy at 7 feet tall in terms of jump shot, right? Sabonis can't hit a three like Turner can. Like, Turner has
Sabonis misses easy 2-point shots every once in a while. Turner has free throws.
No, but Turner has an unreal ability to, like, at 6'11", I would say he's probably 7 foot, he's probably lying when he stunts it, where he can make a jump shot.
I thought that heights were supposed to be, like...
No, I mean, players lie about heights all the time.
I thought that this year they were supposed to actually...
You're right. They were supposed to, but I don't know if what...
I mean, Kevin Durant had his real height listed.
Wasn't Kevin Durant, he says he's 6'9", he's really 7 feet.
Yes, that was such a lie. Kevin Durant wants to be a midget in basketball.
No, but that's the thing I don't see with Turner, is the Pacers are not giving him an opportunity to fail situations, right? He doesn't play with a bench unit where he can kind of become the offensive focal, right? He doesn't really get the opportunity. Now, maybe it's because they don't see it in practice and whatnot, but I still think there is something there lacking where, like, maybe he should be the guy they try to get the ball to for shots at certain points. You know, because
I feel like he doubts himself because the rest of the team.
Yeah, he's a pretty good.
I'm also super biased, and I'm also not game watcher.
But it
frustrates me.
To me, he's a really decent jump shooter if he's given the opportunity to do it. But the problem is that
people don't trust him with the ball.
And he's not given it in the right situation where he's given it in these
Last second, you're open and I'm going to throw it to you. And he's like, I can't make this shot, so then I'm going to doubt myself.
These very mechanical plays where he gets three in the first quarter, three in the third quarter, and then the rest of his shots are so out of, like, flow, right? Something about the offensively is you have to kind of take so many shots per quarter to be kind of in rhythm. And he's never really in rhythm because it's like...
I love him so
It's
much.
Very, like, it's your play, Turner. Instead of, like, you're getting the shot and the movement of the ball, it's just
make
your
it,
play.
Yeah.
And that's
instead of it being like definitively his, it should just be like routed for him.
Well, like if you watch some plays,
instead of like just passing.
If you watch some plays with Sabonis, right? A lot of times you're like, okay, Sabonis,
I don't want to watch this.
You're gonna be in this action. Sometimes it's just like, oh well, Vic couldn't, you know, they set a pick and Vic couldn't beat the guy. Sabonis had a score. Like there's things like that. Versus Turner, it's like we're running this play for you exactly. Instead of just like at times just sort of finding him in a moment where he's maybe option two, but you decided to use him because or whatever. Like he always on the court is option four, right? You know, the guy with the ball in his hands, or option five even, right? But even the guy with the ball is going to pass the ball, he's always the fourth option left in the court for the ball handler versus where maybe he should be the second or third option
or
at times.
First.
I mean, it depends on the court, but he should be used more. I think if you could boost, because if you could boost his offensive efficiency, I think with a better rhythm, you make him a better player and make the team better. Even, you know, if he is taking, let's say, 11 shots a game, which is about a shot and a half, or shot in 8/10 more than he is right now. I think that's even better. I think if you take 11 or 12 per game, you could be shooting them at...
How do you take 8/10 of a shot?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's...
Where you shoot and you kind of follow through, but the ball doesn't...
Whatever, you're taking two more shots per game. Whatever. I'm talking about an overall, like, sample size. Right. If it's over 40 games, it's taking...
Whatever. I don't actually care.
It's taking 70, 72 more shots than it normally would.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Anyways... What I was trying to say before you rudely interrupted me was I think you'd be better off sacrificing some of the other players' shots for his shots. Because I think if you can get him in a better rhythm where he can boost his offensive efficiency up to like the 38% from three and 46-47% from the field, he becomes a much harder player to defend all of a sudden, and it kind of changes the dynamics of this team. Because when he's on the court now, teams I think are going to start based like they did tonight. Just let him shoot. If he makes it,
let him shoot.
No, but if he beats us, we'll live with it. But if he starts making shots at a consistent enough rate, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we let him beat us. It's going to keep beating us. We have to figure out a different way to beat this Pacer team. So that's my thoughts on it. I don't know.
That's not my thoughts. My thoughts are, I don't actually watch the game. I just love him so much. There's one person on the team that I really don't like. And Adam knows that. I'm not going to say it because it doesn't matter.
It's pretty obvious if you listen a little bit.
Yeah, if you listened a little bit, you would know it doesn't matter. I love him. I'm happy. I'm tired of people being in Tony and Adam's mentions that Adam's going to pause it on me because he doesn't want this.
No, I'm just getting up because we're going to wrap up. We're wrapping up the show.
I love him so much.
You can follow Marina at Marina Higuera.
You don't have to.
Follow me from Adam 5.
If you follow Gary, you should follow me.
Our podcast at Lockdown Pacers. Shout out to Gary, our number one fan, I say. Sorry if you think you're our number one fan. If you think you're our number one fan, I think he is. But
you should tag me more when Miles
certainly
does
we have
things.
A lot of top fans, so I don't want to discredit anyone there.
The Pacers.
As always, you can catch this podcast on where you listen to podcasts everywhere, right?
I listen on Spotify.
Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes. All the sites.
All the good stuff.
As always, we bring you podcasts 5 days a week, so Tony will be back tomorrow with a preview of this weekend's games. And
thank
then we'll
God.
Be back together for Monday weekly show
not
once again.
Me, just Tony
that
and
is
Adam.
That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. Marina keeps interrupting me, but who cares? Thank you guys and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks.